press that. And we're online on Wolf Spirit Radio. Good afternoon, good evening. Welcome, everybody, to Journeys with JP. Just having I hope there wasn't too much dead air, but we were getting into a good old pre-show chat, and oh my God, she's a little, isn't it five now? So you're perfectly right, and my very timely guest tonight is Jill Matson. We've spoken before. I don't know if we've spoken on the Monday. Have we spoken on the Monday or the Sunday?
I don't recall.
Well. However, we have Jill's a returning guest, a sound healer, researcher, author. So you've got some fresh and exciting stuff going on for you.
Yeah, you bet.
Let us know. So welcome to Journeys with JP. This is Revolution Radio. We're listener supported, massive station, and there's lots of people listening to this and eager. Because when we talk about sound healing, everybody loves to talk about listen about sound healing. And we're also on Wolf Spirit Radio, which is a subscriber-supported station. We've got massive amounts of archives available to the subscribers. And where else are we? Well, of course, we're on Ever Beyond Radio, which is my own radio station, which is, you know, that's my site. And in fact, if you go to everbeyondradio.com, you can book appointments with me and indeed find some amazing things. We've got some lovely pendants made by Wolf Baby. We've got some Shungite pendants, pyramids, all sorts of things. Come along, and crystals and stuff. Loads of stuff you can buy people for presents, if you like, or buy them for yourself. It's really cool. Anyway, where are we? We're also on Tir na Sal. Let's see if we're on Tir na Sal. Do we have a slot on Tir na Sal just now? Yes, we are. Welcome, Tir na Sal Island, and this is Journeys with JP on Revolution Radio, Wolf Spirit Radio, and Tir na Sal. So, my guest tonight is indeed Jill Matson, and so, cool and exciting stuff. I know, I'm sorry, I interrupted you with all these station announcements, but they have to be done. Cool and exciting stuff, indeed. Oh.
Would you like me to just start?
I would, and I won't interrupt you this time, so, yeah.
Okay. I have been studying sound and how they use sound in music throughout the ages. And I start back with Lemuria and Atlantis through a lot of emerging records in Central America, and, of course, little dribbles of records throughout the Druids, ancient Chinese, Hindus, Egyptians, etc. And I have spent 25 years going through these mystery schools. So that would be the teachings of Lao Tzu, of Buddha, Rosicrucians, Theosophy, and many, many more. And what came when I read all these different mystery schools was that their prized and secret hidden information was sound healing. And the reason for that, a theme through all these stories and all these societies globally, was that sound is very powerful, not better than other energy, but simply powerful because through sympathetic resonance, energy transfers, and it transfers in its greatest quantity in the same frequency. And sound is the same broadband range as our body, mind, soul. And according to all these stories, again, all over the globe, is that Atlantis sunk in part, at least, due to the misuse of sound. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know, but I do know that the ancient mystery schools hid sound healing because if you don't have virtue, you could use it to control people. Sound can be used to kill. Sound can be used to transfer germs. And so in their mystery schools of spiritual information, you had to be an improved initiate, disciple, adept, or master before they gave you the sound stuff. And again, not better than, just very powerful methods. And when you use them for beneficial purposes, they're very powerful. So I've written books on this. I've written, my first book was Ancient Sounds, Modern Healing, and I'm using sound like the ancient people did, just for purposes. If you think about it, when you read these stories, they're really kind of far out. They talk about the Atlanteans, the early Atlanteans and the Lemurians being telepathic. So you don't need language. And they could hear music clairaudiently, so you really don't need sound for entertainment. So what was it? Well, it was like just like a big toolbox. You know, you open your medicine chest and there's all that stuff you can choose from for benefits that you want. And that's the way sound was. Sound was used to grow your crops better. We could talk about that. Sound was used for warfare, mind control, population control, controlling emotions. Sound was used to heal your liver. Sound was used to rehabilitate criminals. Sound was used to change your relationships. Sound was used to do what we would deem to be a miracle, simply by the energy in your voice. So there's this many prong that you can use simply energy that's sound. And I do it in my own music. I have about 7 CDs now, and each one of them has benefits. And in most of the CDs, I'm going back to these ancient mystery schools where they use sound for, to me, dazzling effects, and I bring them forward. So people can just listen. Sound is inexpensive, it's accessible. You can have drive-by healings, heal everybody in the room, sleep with it. And, how cool is that? And I'm bringing that forward from the ancient customs. So there's kind of like an overview, Jay. I don't know where you want to drill down into, but, I don't know.
Ermagerd, right. Well, I'm kind of mainly interested in about all of those, in terms of my own sort of personal and in terms of what people might enjoy on the show as well. See, here's the thing. When you were talking about that, the first thing I think when you say ancient music, the first thing I think about is, all right, a caveat is that I'm a real fan of 432. And that takes us back to Pythagoras, right? Mm-hmm. But further than that is Lao Tzu. Now, when I was 22 years old and I picked up a copy of the Tao Te Ching, I looked at the poem and I thought, wow, this guy, I get the way this guy thinks. And this is the first time I've ever read a book where it kind of made sense the way he was looking at things. And then I hear about Chinese music. I read about a book about 10, 15 years ago that declared that Chinese music for 6,000 years was based on the pentatonic scale harmonics of Lao Tzu's voice. Hang on. Of Lao Tzu's voice when he was relaxed. And everything was based on that frequency.
Well,
his soul frequency.
I could flush into that, but do you
go ahead?
Do you want to relate that to the Greeks before I flush into that?
Oh, take it wherever you like. I just thought that's the nugget that came to me okay. When you said that. So let's run with that for the moment.
All righty. When I looked at the music structures from the eyes of an ancient sage, they looked at music as numeric patterns expressed by frequencies. So they looked at the world as numbers of vibrations expressed as frequencies, or at least could be expressed, kind of like string theory, to modern string theory. And when I looked at like the music pattern, let's say of the Sumerians, which preceded the ancient Chinese, their music was based on this incredible pattern of sixes. Their math was even 60 based. And that creates like a different matrix, a different set of frequencies, a different set of emotions that would trigger in the listeners. And as that society falls, and let's say the ancient Chinese music comes up, The ancient Chinese music is based on pentatonic everything, five everything, five notes in a scale, five types of instruments, five directions they'd point their instruments. That would be northeast, southwest, and up, or center. And then, you know, would compare to five elements. It would compare to five everything. And they had this elaborate mathematical maze in which they came up with pitches and notes and harmonies all based on the number five. Then when you roll the clock ahead, you can see the ancient Greek music being built on fours. They have their tetrachords, tetra meaning four, and silly me being a musician, I didn't figure that one out forever because I thought of the chord as we think of it today, and it has a numeric pattern today, and musicians would know it's a 1-3-5, not a four. But chord meant something different back then. Anyway, chord was just two notes played at one time. So they made patterns of fours. And they would write, and in the early Middle Ages, they would write that if anybody played an interval of three, something that we really enjoy today and find very pleasant, they felt it was like scratching your nails on a fingerboard. But as people changed and learned lessons and were ready for new emotions, I believe the music morphs into the threes, and you have this three pattern showing up in the Middle Ages. And their music is based on the solfeggio scale, which at its roots is a 3-6-9, a three pattern. And then you can go into melodies and two music. Jazz would have two, an interval of a two in its chord. And then you have today's rap music. It's a one melody, it's a one rhythm, it's a 1-1-1 pattern. And so, in my view, when you take the big view, not just look at a snippet from this one and a snippet from that one, I feel like music throughout the centuries was kind of like a rainbow. You know, first you learn frequencies maybe associated with red, and every color, if you take colored light down octaves, and octaves in music is the same note, just this thump, bum, see, see. And so if you can take colored light down octaves, you see colors mathematically correspond to musical notes. So you could have like music that centers on red or centers on passion, anger, ego, things associated with red. You could then have like the Tibetan and the Hindu music is based on orange, or scientific or different types of sensual feelings of meditation and getting to nirvana. You could go and learn, green from Buddha, matters of the heart and matters of abundance and lack and grace and love from Jesus and transformation from Saint Germain. So you can look at the music throughout the ages, and you can correlate it to a different set of emotions and colors. And throughout time, to me, I feel like we've been playing music and we've gradually played the rainbow, and that has enabled us to have a big diet of a certain emotion so we can experience it and learn to master it. So now I kind of feel like much of humanity is ready to graduate because we've now learned the rainbow colors, the white light, and some of us, the light workers, will start to put that together and kind of reverse the cycle and go back to spirit or become more spiritual. A little bigger bird's eye view than just looking at the Greek or a little snippet from the China.
Okay.
I don't know what you think.
That's very interesting. So we're looking at the development, like from a chakric point of view,
yes.
We're more or less on the same page, Jill, I think, because what I've been talking about all the time is the rays, and the rays and the chakras, and these are, the rays are it's just another way to say A B C sharp D, you know.
Yes, it is.
And it's a little scale of A there. I think people didn't get, I think I got away with it. Anyway, it's another way to demonstrate this banding that, you know, in the same way that colors occur as a continuum through the rainbow, but there's a point in the place where it's just, you know, perfectly red and perfectly blue. And those are the kind of archetypes of the rays.
Mm-hmm.
So it's essentially the same thing. As we're evolving, as humanity's evolving, and you've got the fives, the six, you know, and we're going from the red, where do we get the wrap? Where does wrap come in terms of chakras? Is that at the fifth, at the brow center?
Well,
I always like to talk about the position rather than first or second, because everybody goes, some people start from the top, some people start from the bottom, some people spiral around. So yeah. If you want to talk about like a chakra, if we say like the brow center or the sacral, you know, so that we know where it is rather than according to a thingy.
Well, in my new book upcoming this summer called Lost Waves of Time, I explain the music in each of these epics, and rather than relating it to a chakra, which you can do, I relate it to numbers. And I see that the numbers, as the numbers or the frequencies get closer together, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, in the musical patterns, because music's made up of number patterns. You can analyze like cycles per second and count them, or count rhythmic beats. So you can look at the numbers underneath music. And as it got closer, in my book, I'm proposing that mankind evolved into matter, meaning that he became less like an elf or a fairy and became more human, more flesh, more unable to connect with spirits and group souls, more standing on his own 2 feet, learning to be independent, perhaps learning to be a god. And in this state, that to me would be the purpose of incarnating into human form, would be to go from this, you know, kind of global group spirit like the Lemurians and Atlanteans were, to go, and then you see the tribe mentality throughout history, and then to go to all by yourself. And there's a certain evolution in that. But because we're in a world of duality, it's like there's a negative and a positive bipolar end to each frequency, to each number, to each color, to each chakra. And so as we go into number one, to me, it's a very individual number. It's a lone number. My own lifetime as a child, I lived in all my neighbors' pockets. I don't even know who my neighbors are now. And I, you know, you just see the world becoming more individualistic. And I think it's the wrap that's doing that. The other thing with the wrap, because I think everything is a positive and negative, rap, punk rock, all those kinds of harsh sounding music, I believe they're cathartic release. And I'm kind of a Pollyanna here, but I believe every system of music has a positive and a negative. And so that rap beat is, it's fast, it's ushering in change quickly. And for people who have been hurt and are very hardened, it's just kind of like a jackhammer, hopefully, shattering that hard emotional body and pain. And so they can kind of break through that. On the negative side, if you have the intent that I want my pain, I like feeling sorry for myself, I like being a tough guy, then with your intent changed, you can listen to that really harsh music and become more harsh and more dark and more alone. So I don't know if that quite helps you. I guess I see the rap music as being like the pinnacle of being your own person. For good and for bad. Does that?
Yeah, it's very interesting because you know that there is a stigma of some kind attached to rap. To me, some of the best performers I've known have been rap, but that's not, you know, this, I'm talking about Gil Scott-Heron, and, you know, guys from a long time ago who actually talked about stuff like a bard. He told the story. It was a lyrical thing, but it was against a rhythm as opposed to against a melody. Mm-hmm. And he's here's my hand, and I got the two fingers thing, you know. Anyway, but I'm so white, you know. But you know, I'm bald and white, you know. But still, the use of expressing yourself as a singularity, in poetry to music. Like you say, has these the dark side and the light side. You can use it as social commentary. Now, what's his name? There's a modern guy. Can't remember. But there's, you know, Benjamin Zephaniah. He was even like the British Poet Laureate candidate at some point. Reggae poets, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an honor, but as you say, it's a bit like being an orator. It's a leadership role because you're expressing for the people, aren't you?
Mm-hmm. And so anyway, I've just devoted my life to going through these epics and putting it in my music. Like I have two CDs, Stardust and Paint Your Soul, and in Paint Your Soul, I go in. And I copy ancient ways of that they would like raise their energies, take the elevator to heaven, to spiritual fast track. And they did it in two ancient ways that were prevalent across the globe. Everybody seemed to be doing this. One was to take shapes found in nature. That's the roots of sacred geometry. And the most prevalent one would be this spiral in the galaxy in a seashell 100,000 times in your body, and they would take that the number pattern that creates that spiral shape, and that up until maybe 300 years ago was most everybody's scale, musical scale. So when you listen to sound that we produce, we're producing mathematically that spiral, and we stopped 300 years ago. And at that time, as soon as we stopped, then the Industrial Revolution began. I believe that's when we lost our disconnect. We were able to plunder Earth without realizing, you know, what we were doing. And so in this CD, I put these spirals back in the sound, in tuning forks in the background, and the solfeggio pattern, which is a pattern of 3, 6, and 9s, that's found in the Bible, it's found in Egypt, it's found in, you know, the Middle Ages. And, you know, if you do Carillion photography, listening to some of these number sound patterns, your aura lights up. You know, it just brings an energy to your body, mind, soul, and connects you to Earth. That's the Paint Your Soul. And then the Stardust, again, I found this across the globe in my research, and since I'm a musician, I incorporated it to bring it forward, because I believe it's a spiritual technique. It's a beautiful and easy way to share. So in the Stardust, the ancient people tuned to heaven. And they did that for two purposes. One was that they believed, this would be ancient wise sages, that souls can incarnate in more than a human body, like an animal has a soul, or a plant, or a planet, you know, when they say Gaia has inhabited Earth. And I don't know, I've spoken to Gaia. She seems very separate to me and far more evolved than I. And so when a planet moves in its frequency, it gives off a frequency. And so in this Stardust, I've used this ancient star tuning in which I put the frequencies the planets give off. And the idea with ancients was to tune literally to those stars, and by doing that, it's kind of like having a beeper or a direct line into a very high being to kind of like download this higher energy, to upload divine energy. And then the other reason why ancient people would tune to the stars literally, was that they believed that if you were in tune with the stars, when astrology comes in, which is simply negative energy created by different patterns of moving planets in our system, the waves come in below our hearing range. You could buy them off of Motorola. They're there. That's not woo-woo. That's science. And when they come in and they're dissonant, they challenge us. But the ancient idea was like, hey, if you're really tuned to the stars, it's kind of like water off a duck's back. So, I mean, there's two examples in my music where, and it's very beautiful, angelic, harmonic, easy to listen music with this big sweep of tuning forks. And it's very uplifting. It's a new concept of music. It's a purpose-driven music. It's pay attention to what you're listening to. If you're going to listen, why not listen to something to bless?
This sounds beautiful. So, okay, so this is what I was, you know, you're saying, okay, so they use the tunes of the stars. I think of Jimi Hendrix, right? I was on I was producing a show a few months ago, and there was a musician there who had been around in the 60s in the Times, and he said that he was in the room when Hendrix tuned his guitar. And it took a while, but it was a spiritual experience for him because of what Hendrix was tuning into. He did that. Have you looked at Hendrix? Have you listened to his live? You know,
yeah.
What can you say? I mean, we all love Hendrix here on the station. He's like the so what could you say about Hendrix?
Tell us. Ancient tradition.
Indeed.
How to put this? I got two answers, so I'm going to give them both. But if you look at the ancient Hindu traditions, when you go, there are a few of the ancient musical players alive, and they're in the Hindu tradition. If you go to a concert, let's say Sri Swamiji Sakinana Ganapathi, he's one of these ancient sound healers. And his musicians come, and they will start to tune, and they tune for an hour. So if they say the concert starts at 7, it ain't going to start till 8, but everybody's expected to be there at 7. And you kind of chit-chat, and nobody really notices. They expect the main musicians to be late. That's their custom. What's going on is that they are tuning the audience to those particular notes, because they're through their sound, they're going to pick beneficial frequencies to undo astrology. With Sri Swamiji, he'll come and he has psychic vision, so we'll see what the major illness is, and he will tune the music to start to undo the people's health issues or emotional issues. But since everybody might be at a different kind of place, you really have to be body, mind, soul in sync with that one tone. So spending time and spiritually becoming one with the tone is incredibly important. And the second thing I would say, again, and I think this is in my Secret Sounds Ultimate Healing book, but I have many of the ancient master sound traditions. And one of them was listening to silence. Sounds kind of silly, but silence can be quite noisy. If you listen to silence, this is one way they developed psychic skills. You first hear body sounds, and then as a spiritual on a path, you'll hear different nature sounds, and I've done this myself. I heard crickets, I've heard oceans, I've heard bells, I've heard flutes, I've heard bagpipes, and I'd go through these phases where I'd hear these little sounds when I really tuned in inward. And let's say I'm listening to bells, it's like bing, bing. And then you would listen to the silence in between the bells, and I would hear a smaller subset of bing, bing, bing. And it's like you could keep on drilling down. And it reminds me of like a galaxy, and then a solar system, then a planet, then a continent, and then a state, and then you, and then your right arm, and then a cell, and then a nanoparticle. It's like worlds within worlds. It's like vibrations kind of clustered inside other vibrations. And one of the things that ancient people did was they spent a lot of spiritual time with one tone. there's the segment to Mr. Hendricks, one tone. And it was a spiritual kind of like digging into not just that tone, but if you, like, a tone is going to go wah, wah, you can hear it in a low bass tone. You can hear the pulsing of the sigh, of the wave of the sound. And if you're really careful, you can go down below and hear a smaller pulsing and keep going in. And it's like, it's almost like you transcend through one tone. And that was a prize technique that people in spiritual schools would use to develop psychic skills, because in sound you can hear little tiny frequencies, and by the time you're focusing in, recognizing these little nuances within one tone, you're becoming quite intuitive, and you can now recognize feelings or spirits or other things. And just to verify this, if you look at that Lao Tzu music, they'll have a song, and let's say you're going to do vibrato. Now, I'm a violinist, so vibrato to me is a common word, but certainly not to everyone. And vibrato is just when you're playing violin or another stringed instrument or something, and you just go, like, la. It's the shaking, the up and down, ah, 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 ah. So it's, you just take your finger, this is what I was taught, and just wiggle it up and down. That's today. But in Lao Tzu's time, they would have like 40-some symbols on how you would shape that vibrato within 1 second. Now think of that. Think of being so perceptive that you could take that vibrato, make it light, fast, slow down. They'll give you all these different ways to sculpt a second. And so the listener has to be very spiritual, very in tune, very connected. And so does the musician. And again, you know, what is Hendricks doing when he's spending all that time loving that frequency, vibing with that frequency, getting into that frequency? It's an ancient spiritual practice. I don't know. Does that help?
Quite a lot. So, by the way, mm-hmm. You got a couple of fans in the Rev chat room here, over in the War Spirit chat room, everybody's in. Actually, there was a few, maybe half an hour ago, you said something about they could transfer germs using sound.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to expand on that? I mean, we know all about Black Ops. We know all about MK Ultra. We know about microwave beaming. We know about voice to skull technologies. So, is this another? Well, what's the deal? What's the deal?
Okay, it's psychic. It's not science. So, first of all, I'm not going to give you a science explanation. More of an ancient sage first, and second, I really don't want to get into too much detail, because I wouldn't want someone unethical to listen to this and say, hey, let's try it. But let me just say this from like an ancient sage kind of point of view. If you go to a medium and you have a reading, they'll bring you down information about your life or what's going to happen. So what's going on there? They're tying into your energy, and they're just kind of moving it back, moving it forward. Now, why they're in your energy, and the proof that they're in their energy is that they're able to tell you this and this is going to happen. Okay, and how would they know that? Because they're in your energy stream. Well, why you're in somebody's energy stream, if you start feeling like crap, sound waves and close proximity combine? So I'm very careful, for example, that I would never check on anybody's energy or do a reading or a healing unless I'm feeling tip-top, because waves in close proximity combine, and I only want to combine my best. But it's very, just being a little creative, it could go the other way. And think of how sound can harm. Just think of getting rid of kidney stones. How do they get rid of them? Well, they blast on the smithereens with what? Sound.
That's right. That's like, oh, I can't remember. Is it something olitho? Do you know the medical word for that? Litho something or
no, I don't.
No, I've lost it as well. But it's litho is a stone and smashing, yeah. Whatever. Well, the smashing stones is in Latin or Greek. That's the one. Anyway, yeah. So Olive here, who is actually a bloke. I think it's Oliver. Sorry, but love Jill Matson and her music. I've listened to her music and really relaxed me. And
thank you.
He's also saying that sound can put out fire. As well, I posted on my Facebook page, indeed, a little device, a little handheld device. You point it at a flame, it's like a fire extinguisher with sound. How mm-hmm. cool is that?
Mm-hmm.
No, you don't need to reload. The amazing, you know, I've got a new, I don't know if you come across this one, but I thought of it this afternoon in my thinking about doing the show tonight. I thought, you've got an acoustic acoustic apothecary.
Yes, absolutely.
It's a good
thing. I have a CD that has vitamin-associated sounds in it, and it weighs in close proximity combined, and it's called Deep Way Beauty, and I also put in collagen in the frequencies of your muscles and your face and neck, and here's my thinking with that, is that this is kind of gross, but, you know, think about taking your face muscles and stringing it on a violin and taking your leg muscles and stringing it on a cello. Well, the longer string is going to produce a bass tone, and the higher string is a little more soprano-y. And so as we age, our muscles sag and they get a little longer, flat. So by listening to the sounds of youthful, healthful muscles, you know, you absorb sound. So your sounds, your muscles would have to kind of constrict a little bit to hold the resonance. Anyway, there's an example right there where using sound for like a purpose like that.
I see. So much like
youthening.
Yes. Yes. Now, I have also been working with another group, and I had a representative of that group a couple of weeks back, Rachel Ledbetter. And she does this exactly what you're saying, intuitively. So she will, will say, "Can you give us a note for detoxing yeast?" For instance, she gave us one for mm-hmm. detoxing yeast, and because that's my big, it's one of my big bugbears, yeast. Anyway, we'll talk about it. And she goes, ha! You know, and it's just like the whole opera singer thing. It's an incredible, and the force she holds it with, I don't know where the breath comes from, because she can go on for a really long time singing this note, and then it's gone. And it's, and you can feel it. It's like your body just reverberates saying, oh, wow, something has just smashed into a million pieces. Like, go ahead.
Can I tell you about Royal Rife?
Yes, you can. I've heard of him, but
in the 40s. And what he would do is he would look at live cells. So he wouldn't take like a blood, you know, a sample and take it out and analyze it at the lab. He would look at live cells, and he had some type of crystal lens on his microscope. This is in the 40s and 50s, so that he could see that well. And imagine a cell. I know I've seen them, and they look like jellyfish, big blobs, and they breathe in and out. And if you measure how much it breathes in and out with little simple mathematics, you can figure out what its frequency. For what is a frequency? If not, it's just a vibration in and out. So anyway, he could look, and what he was doing is looking at, let's say, a cancer cell, and he was measuring its frequency. Now, waves in close proximity combined. So think of this. I'm making this number up. Let's say the cancer was 800 cycles per second. Then he would have someone listen to one over 800 cycles per second. And waves in close proximity combined. So what happens? You have 800 times 1 over 800, and if they're sung properly, they're going to cancel each other out. Voila, no cancer. And so you can buy these Rife books, and they're just books of frequencies that list the cycles per second of different diseases. Now, I would say that diseases are kind of live things, and they evolve. So you might want to do a band, like if it's just go up and down a little bit in case the germ has modified itself for its own protection. But underneath the intuitiveness of that woman is the science.
Yes, indeed. As I say, I like to play around. Let's see if I can find it. I took the Schumann resonance, mm-hmm. right, and I modulated a 4/3 hertz, 4/3/2 tone with the Schumann mm-hmm. resonance.
Oh, nice!
As a phase shift. So check this. It's really quite. It's quite. It's like a bit science fictiony, a bit like the tricorder in Star Trek. Check this.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. Coming on. Coming. It's coming. It's loading. Come on. Come on. How long does it take to load, Winamp? There we go. Here we go. Here we go. Come. I actually personally find that quite pleasant. I don't know if it may have distorted over the phone, but
I thought it was beautiful.
It's a bit like to me, science fictiony, but also like a very clear toned bell of some kind, isn't it?
For a good mood.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, think of this. I'm going to say hello 3 times. And pay attention to what my meaning is.
Okay.
Hello. 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 Now I
well,
just
hello.
Did 3 different communications.
Yeah.
None of them were hello. So sound carries other things. It combines. So, you know, when I heard that tone, somehow or other, to me, it was carrying this feeling, just like I did right in that little example. And it was just a uplifting, joyful kind of feeling. It was very nice for me. I liked it.
Cool. I bought a 4/3/2 hertz tuning fork a few months ago. And it arrived a few weeks ago, and I've been using it on the show, and everybody loves it when I do it. And it's just like a bing, and they can hear it. And again, you can hear that's the tone. When Jill was talking earlier about vibrato, that's exactly what vibrato sounds like. It's almost as if to illustrate what Jill was talking about. Is the specific frequency of the vibrato is what we're talking about, and the number of things per second, number of vibrations per second. That's exactly what Jill was talking about a few minutes ago. So I'll just give you another blast of that just for the crack. The Schumann resonance and 4/3/2. So that would probably be nice in a little transmitter of some kind. Go ahead, Jill.
Yeah. I definitely think so. The Schumann resonance, I don't know, I read a couple studies where they were linking it with healing. They had found that it was present in the body when, you know, people were getting better. I've put the Schumann resonance in some of my CDs. I have this one CD. I put it in this CD called Contacting Angels, Masters, and Guides. So this is kind of cool. And I channel angels, masters, and guides. And just like, you know, if your mother's sitting next to you, you can feel what that feels like. So it's not like this is any special skill I have. We all have it. Somebody that we're with a lot, we know what they feel like. And so I know when I'm about to channel, like if it's Jesus or some Michael or somebody, I know what it feels like. I know who they are before they speak because I feel them, and I'm used to that. And so I found that it recorded, so I could identify when they were present on tape, which means that we have like a signature energy unheard below our hearing range, and that it records. So anyway, on the CD, I talk about, I equate the rays, starting off at how we started this conversation, the color rays of the rainbow with things in your body. So like if you have a red illness, it's circulation, or, you know, if you have a red emotional problem, it's ego or lack of confidence or an anger issue or something like that. And so I correlated your emotions and your health with different rays. And then I pulled in the angels and the masters of the ray, and then I channeled them, and then so I could introduce you them to their feeling and also to download their energy, because you simply waves and close proximity combine. And then I put in this rainbow garden where I put the music of the rays, which is simple. It's just music in the key signature of the color of the ray. So like, you know, B is violet, and that's just math. And so I'll put music in B, and then I'll channel all of the violet, like Saint Germain or all the other angels and masters in violet, and introduce you to them. And it's full of the Schumann resonance. Anyway, and then I have like a meet and greet. It's kind of a fun thing, I think. And it's almost like, who are you going to call? You know, Ghostbusters! And so that what I'm saying is that there are going to be some angels or masters that their mere presence could be starting to slowly heal your illness if you pick them properly. And that's the kind of information in the CD. It's educational and meditational.
Excellent. Infotational. So it's... It's basically you've got a kind of an acoustic apothecary.
Yes.
And what's marvelous about it is that you don't need to get anybody to make pills for you. No. You could probably have you ever worked with the radionics side of things?
No, not yet, but I will.
Because that's like the subtle energy version of this this whole acoustic thing.
Mm-hmm.
And have you worked with light modulation? That's one thing that I'm interested in.
What do you mean by light modulation?
Okay, so you hear the thing that I did with the 432 tone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's modulation. Imagine modulating a light beam or a light bulb with the same frequency. So you make the light bulb pulse at a frequency. That's a way to silently impress a frequency on someone by having a flashing light.
Well, you know that's already done. Let me give you an example. The electricity in the United States, when you look at its cycle per second, it comes in at a violet, an indigo violet. And look at how United States looks at its leaders. Look at old Clinton, you know, he gets a little frisky, and all us Americans get like really put out, and how dare he? Whereas when I was over in Europe at that time, and they were like, oh, get a life, you know, they all do that. They were looking at different things. And if you look at the electricity in Europe, it's different. You use a different adapter because its cycle per second is different.
We have a different
frequency. In Europe, you're blue. And what is blue? Blue is nurturing. Blue takes care of. And the downside of blue would be enables. But look at Greece. Look at all the benefits they've given. They've given, taken care of everybody. Now they're broke. That's blue. That's the problem. That's the challenge with blue. And you can almost see what you're talking about with simply checking out the cycles per second of electricity in these different continents.
You know, I had exactly this conversation last night on Ever Beyond with a paranormal investigator. And here's a nugget for you.
Mm-hmm.
One of the stories he says is that he went to a haunting. And he's a scientist, you know, he's there to kind of basically, like, debunk it. But, to find natural origins for certain paranormal-looking things. But he was saying that 60 cycles a second keys into the alpha frequency at subharmonic. That means a subharmonic is a fraction, a proper fraction of the frequency that has a musical relationship as well. So it's like an octave thing or perfect fifth. Anyway, meanwhile, 60 cycles a second keys in to the alpha frequency, and there was the story of the magic fish tank, okay? So there was a house, and everybody in the house was having these weird hallucinations, weird dreams, apparitions, and all sorts of weird stuff was going on. And it turned out that the humble pump for the fish tank that was sitting in the living room had lost its ground. And so this pump not only was pumping air into the fish tank, but it was also pumping electromagnetic fields all around the house.
Mm-hmm.
This was inducing into everybody's brain, and it was mm-hmm. causing them to have hallucinations. That's the power of 60 hertz.
Yes. Well, there was a French physician called Gavrand after the turn of World War II. And he was obviously, I suppose, the horror of war was near and dear to everybody at that time. And he was a scientist who was working on a contract for the French government to come up with mass weapons. Anyway, they were a whole team of scientists working on this, and they all got sick, all of them, and deathly sick. And they were trying, you know, was it pollution? Was it this? Was it that? And anyway, after a very extensive study, they figured that it was the radiator. The radiator was kind of rattling, and it had a frequency that wiped them all out. And so that, you know, meanwhile, there's this group on a contract to come up with weapons of mass destruction. And or weapons of whatever, and they started experimenting with sound, and it's like incredible. They're just playing around because they didn't know. So one of the experiments was to create a police whistle 6 foot big, because I suppose Gavrand thought that was really nasty. And when it went off in the lab technician was killed and his organs were jellied. And they had this whole series of experiments of using sound as a weapon.
Now that's one subwoofer, but you know, you can imagine that the precise science of that was worked out, and there's probably some ship somewhere that's got a device like that that's sort of on the bow. I wouldn't be surprised if you know, if the Navy wouldn't have something like that.
I read about a study in it wasn't a study, it was a report. They were I think it was on California coast. There was like 60 beached whales, and their brains were blown up. And the article was suggesting that indeed had happened, and that the Navy, the U.S. Navy, had practiced. Experimented with a sonar underground and killed the whale population.
Bastards.
Anyway, that was what the article said.
Yeah. I mean, that's just,
agree.
You know, that's just like a kid with an air rifle killing some birds. You know,
yeah.
Just for the crack. It's just like, you know, you'd think we'd gotten away. Anyway, meanwhile, so sound can be used to hurt and it can be used to heal. It can also be used to manipulate.
Yes.
I remember Shari talking about, you know, there are a few guys in the back with the suits and the little earpieces come to a few of her lectures. Learning how to make people sound more... to sound more credible. And she actually has the frequency, a specific frequency, you know, you have B flat and E, and you sound credible. There's truth in there, and people register that sound as truth.
Yes.
But what's you know, it's very likely, you know, what you have to watch is when people are being interviewed in the street. You know, you interview a politician in the street and they get interviewed in their own specific studios. The studios have frequency enhancement software, let's put it that way. Have you come across any of that?
No, I haven't. It's very, I believe it to be true. The ancient Chinese did it, but I don't believe they did it for negative reasons. I believe they would set up harmonious music so that they would, as a nation, get along. They had a department of measurement, so anybody who had a flute, it had to conform so that every A was the exact same cycles per second. So we're not going to allow 432 and 440 for A. I mean, everything was regulated. And then they believed that if the music in this village was harmonious with the music in that village, then the peoples of China, their people, would be harmonious and get along.
Well, what a good point to take a break. We'll be back in about 5 minutes' time. Enjoy these notes.
Carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, and nitrogen. And so are you, and so am I. So I put in those frequencies too. It's like subcomponents of the stars. And while we're talking about sounds on the stars and the star frequencies, I have a bunch of them in Stardust CD. There's another man who does it. This is kind of cool. His name is Don Adams, and with LinkedIn groups, it's Sound of the Stars. And now he doesn't give away his proprietary secrets, but he also will come in and look at a star or a an astrological prediction in terms of frequency and kind of describe it in multiple ways, thinking that each description just adds another fuller element of the whole. And while we're on the subject of him, I'll give you another idea of musical astrology. Let's say you have planets that are aligned perfectly in a row. So if you were to look out in the sky, you got a planet directly in front of Earth, and it's coming right in. And there's two planets in a row. Let's say, I don't know, Saturn and Mars. You know, Mars is in front of Saturn if we were to look at it. Those frequencies are going to combine different than if Saturn is straight out and Mars is directly off to the right. And that's something we really don't consider, but again, back to Lemurian and Atlantean music, it was critical then. It was like the musician was like a water pistol, and what angle that he aimed his music at was very important. And they would often create sacred geometry shapes in the angle or the direction that they pointed their sound. It was something that Gavron doctor found. They were trying to do weapons, and what angle they pointed at was very significant. And so anyway, it's something we've overlooked.
Hang on. Let me just stop you there. Mm-hmm. Because there was a thing about angle and the steering of gravitational craft. Is, you know, they you hear about UFOs, right?
Yes.
These are gravity craft. They push on gravity.
Uh-huh.
They don't turn. They don't make sweeping curves. They turn at angles.
Oh yeah.
Just was so there's a thing that there are angles that do these that. You know, that seem to be a natural branch, like the way the tree will angle off to make a new branch.
Right. That's the Fibonacci.
Yep.
Okay, well, back to this idea with astrology. Let's say you have stars in a square, which I believe would be a negative astrological prediction. I'm not an astrologer, but I do know that a negative astrological prediction, if you look at the sounds and how they combine in their positions, usually somewhat discordant, you know, sounds bad. Voila, it's a challenge. It's something that's going to, we're going to have to harmonize. Usually the things in a trine or triangle are positive astrology. And again, you know, it's just kind of working with the math of the sounds and different angles. So anyway, what this Dawn Adams and Sound of Stars does, which you can all join, is that he looks at astrology when it's really good. Like, you know, a time when it says, oh, wow, this is abundance time, or you're going to meet someone really special, or da-da-da-da-da-da. And then he analyzes the frequencies in that star configuration, and he sells them. So you can buy, opportunity to meet a woman. And it's very reasonable, I think. It's kind of fun to play with.
And in a way, that would be it's the overriding of astrology that is the aim of master, isn't it? It's
yes.
Not the fact that we're subject to this. It's the fact that we shouldn't be subject to this. And if we are subject to this, it means that we're somehow tied to the material world instead of the spiritual world. Am I getting
yes.
this? This is the
yes.
this is the essence of the ancient teachings.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So now we're on. I thought we were on the same page.
Helps you to be master of the astrology. The energies coming in from the planets, the challenges. Like, there's a Sri Swamiji Sakananda Ganapathy, and his website, I think, is Datta, DattaPeetham, Ascended Master on Earth, who's a Nada Brahman, meaning he heals with sound. So whenever there's going to be a big challenge in the astrological predictions, he goes out and plays concerts to undo it, to balance it, so that everybody in the audience gets the vibratory strength to be master and overcome. And I believe that was the original origins of astrology. It was music to balance. In the ancient music, they balance from season. You have different music in spring and summer, and we do too in a way. You don't really want to listen to Silent Night in July.
And you don't want to hear surf music in December. It's interesting.
Right.
Again, this goes back to my friend Wadada, the guy who he's a sitar player, and he studied Indian classical music, as you have. And one of the things he told me was that there are different ragas for different times of the day, different seasons,
yes.
as you were saying. And essentially, you're talking about a different key. I mean, he couldn't explain raga to me. I bet you could explain exactly what a raga is to everybody.
Yes.
Please, enlighten us with what...
It's almost like a prescription. The ancient Hindu music was to bless, and everything's to bless and help create an attribute of God into its listeners. And so a raga is like a map for improvisational. They'll tell you which frequencies, notes you can play, which rhythms you can play, and then they'll give you patterns. And then, just kind of like you were talking about Hendrix getting into the one note, it's like the musicians just kind of sink into these parameters, and they kind of like play with the parameters from their soul. But to me, the undiscussed magic of the Hindu ragas is the rhythm. In Western music, we usually have what we call 3-4 or 4-4, and basically it's a kind of a feminine, waltzy feeling, like bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum, or like a march feeling, more masculine, bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum. And we have variations, but that's in essence what it is. And you normally have like a description of the rhythm for the whole song. But in the Hindu ragas, you can have, again, a set of directions, like 27 of them in a row. Well, first you do 3-5 and 5-3 and all these complex patterns. And rhythms entrain your brain. And really, in a way, a pitch is even a rhythm. You can hear it in a deep deep tone. Whoa, whoa. And you hear that one, 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 one rhythm. So there's kind of like a cross between the two. But the magic, the healing, of the, a good portion of the Hindu ragas is the fabulous prescriptive rhythms. And their origins came from animals and nature. Again, it's like another attribute or way of developing the sounds of nature. And then the step beyond that is that God made nature. So if you come in tune with nature, you're coming in one alignment with God. So the ancient Hindus would listen to the beat of the camel, the beat of the horse, to a birdie putting her little baby to bed, to a mother patting her child. And they'll pick up the rhythm patterns, and then they will use them like an apothecary. It's very healing.
So, and this comes, this brings me to another little nugget. Jill, are you still there?
Yes.
Yeah, sorry.
Yes.
Except questions about international money would have taken them out of my mind. Oh, it was so relevant and it was so nuggety. I'm sure it'll pop back into a few more in a few more minutes. I don't want to talk about money. I'm talking about frequency, okay?
Some music that is from the ancient Greeks in a way. It's something we haven't discussed tonight, but the many indigenous tribes would look at healing from the venue of emotions. So if you had an ulcer, you wouldn't take medicine, but you would take a flower vibration or flower essence or stick around daisies because they're cheerful, and that's like a vibratory. Or a subtle, meaning tiny, influence that keeps making you cheerful so that you don't worry. And so given the idea that one way of healing is through the emotions, I was kind of playing around with the flower remedies, and you can get the frequency of anything. So I got the frequency of 12 flower remedies. And people will buy these little vials of the flower remedies and take them, just take to absorb the signature vibration of the plant. Like each flower has a blessing. A rose is beautiful and a daisy is cheerful. And again, your apothecary idea in these little tinctures that you would consume. And so I get the frequencies of them, and of course ways in close proximity combine. So you can listen to the flower remedies as well as ingest them, just the same as nutrients or the vitamins on that Deep Wave Beauty CD. So I have the frequencies of the flower remedies, and music makes you feel. So I put in music that matches the feeling. So the flower remedy is for patience, and the music sounds patient, kind of like I'm trying to double up on it, make it more strong. And then my guides told me that you can sugarcoat your crap, but you still got your crap. Or light coat your crap, and you still got your crap. And they were saying that we can do meditative and downloads and yoga and eat good, but you still, if you've had a stored negative emotional energy, you still need to let go of it. And the ancient Greeks did that. And the way they did that was multifold. I'll tell you the way I did it, and then they did it additional ways that are really kind of cool. The way I did it was that you go in and you emulate the negative energy. Of course, the intent of the person listening to the CD is to release. And think of the ulcer where you worry, worry, worry. And each time you worry, you put a drop of negative energy, and it transfers through sympathetic resonance into that lining of your tummy. And sooner or later, if you keep worrying, you're going to bore a hole in your stomach and get an ulcer. But anyway, so what you do is you get the music that resonates with it, and you shake it, and it'll release free. And so when you listen to these symphonies, it's like you release impatience, build impatience. Release fear, build trust. And I have this musical, it's two discs, where I go through what I've been told clears the emotional human body. And just by listening, you know, you can start to clear on your emotional level. And so that's it for my Healing Flower Symphonies. But the Greeks took it even further. Their scales, you know, most people probably haven't studied medieval scales, but they had names like Ionian, Diorian, da-da-da-da-da. And I always thought, yeah, how funky. But anyway, those are locations.
My favorite is Mixolydian.
Yes, Mixolydian. I have a funny story about that, but I want to drill down first. These were locations, and they're groups of tribes, the people. So our analogy today would be New Yorkers, Southerners, Californians, you know, something, or, you know, Scots and mainland, and, you know, you can get your stereotypes. And that was the name of the scale. And then they took phi, which is found in the Fibonacci series of numbers, or the spiral found in the galaxy and in your body. And they relocated it in their tetrachords, their little patterns of four. And each different scale would work to undo the negative side of a stereotype of a group of people. So if Pythagoras was alive today, we'd have a channel of music for the New Yorkers. We'd have a channel of music for the Southerners. We'd have a channel, you know, for the different ethnic groups. And it would take their stereotype and their challenges and just kind of meld them out, just like I did in my CD with the emotions, and then it would bring in and strengthen their positive. I mean, wow, what a cool use of music.
Well, there's a series of radio stations you could set up, isn't there?
Yeah.
I think you've given yourself a job for life. Supplying music to the people for their healing. No, but this is an amazing insight, is that it's possible to overcome those negative traits, not merely by just people saying, "You're such a twat, you Piscean idiot. You're so gullible," and, you know, all this stuff, you know, "You'll fall for anything." No, I'm not. Yeah, anyway, long story. but every star sign has its vulnerabilities that you can kind of knock it down with, and that's of course what we're working on to strengthen. That's why we incarnate in those. So, but you know, this is a really interesting point. And I just before we kind of move away from these different modes, is that all of those different scales were a different group trying out a different way of dividing 12 into 7. So why is that?
I don't know. I just know that Earth-wide you find the pattern of 12 and 7, 12 disciples, 7 dwarves. But if you look in all of the traditions, globally, from Sumeria to China, you find this propensity towards 12 and 7. And those people who aren't musicians, there's 12 half notes in our scale, and there's 7 different notes in our scale. So that's kind of today's musical system, 12 and 7.
I could demonstrate this, by the way.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hang on a second. Let me just go and grab my guitar. I don't know. Is that a bit loud? I'll turn it down. That is a bit loud. Hang on. Okay. And it's completely out of tune. I'm not going to bother with it.
Okay.
All right, go ahead.
Think of an octave, you know, meaning bum bum, and all the notes in between in the higher registers could have 100,000 frequencies, and yet our music will pick 12 total half tones to represent it all. And there's a whole lot that we don't pick. But in ancient times, they had a lot more variety in their scales, and they picked well, they picked notes, and they were much more notes, and but they were usually, not always, but usually following that spiral pattern found in the galaxy and the body and a beehive and so forth. So usually the patterns they picked, there was many they could pick from, there was a variety they could pick from, but they were usually sacred geometry if you looked at the numbers underneath the music. Whereas today's music in the equal temperament scale, which is adopted earth-wide, if you were to graph it, it's more of a circle. It doesn't have that spiral. And the reason why we did that was because when you had musical scales that were each different, then you'd have to have a different piano for each scale. And it was costly. And, you know, a different flute and a different trumpet for each scale. And in the Renaissance, singers were beginning to just sing what they wanted. Prior to that, the government controlled the music, the church or the king. And when it became a public domain kind of thing 300 years ago, there was a great need to change the music to match the singer's vocal range. And so you had to go to different scales. And on the old system, you couldn't do that without buying expensive piano for each scale. So for economics and convenience, we dropped the ancient sacred geometry and the ancient mirroring of above the stars and the nature in our sounds and our bodies that we absorb from the sounds.
Well, that's very
interesting.
So I don't
know where you were going with that, but that's just fleshing it out for the non-musicians.
Well, here's the thing. We have the circle of 12. We see it all the time. We see it in the clock. We see it in the calendar. We see it in astrology. Okay, circle of 12, 12 things, right? Mm-hmm. And then we have the geometry of 7. And this is, you know, 7 chakras, 7 rays, 7 colors, 7 7 sins, 7 virtues, all that, you know, all the 7 C's, all that. And we both have a connection with that, and that is what we call the scale. Mm-hmm. As opposed to the circle, right? So the scale sits within the circle, and it has different, and as you were saying, as it rises from 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2 to the unity, where you bring all 12 threads to one, how much do you think that has to do with the 12 strands of DNA and reconnecting those as a fully fledged human?
I don't know. I suppose there's resonance, and perhaps on our planet, somehow we're tuned to 12 and 7 because it's a theme across the globe throughout time. I don't really have a good answer for that. Gurdjieff the mage, a Russian mage, he said that in essence, you know, different worlds, dimensions were tuned differently into frequencies, and that was like a pattern of our world, our dimension. Anyway, he offered that.
That we live in a septenary, in a 7 world.
Yeah, and a 7 and 12.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Mm-hmm. And that there are presumably other places in other worlds where different numbers apply. And different.
That's what the Russian mage Gurdjieff said, yes.
Right. I've heard of Gurdjieff, and he's quite interesting. I like his way of thinking as well. I think I have, you know, I've got more of an Eastern way of thinking because I can't read the languages, so, you know, it's only in translations that I get these things. Meanwhile, less about me. Meanwhile, how are you? So, 7s and 12s coalescing to a unity, and one of the things that we've been talking about is ascension. And the idea that we have to cleanse ourselves for this thing, and not because we're bad or, you know, it's just that we've taken on toxins. And I'd like to hear some more about, have you done work that kind of specifically works on, I was talking before about yeast being my my bugbear. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's the thing, and we've been working on frequencies, and we've even got. Do you know about torsion devices and things like that? Have you heard of those?
No, I don't. I do know that you can get the frequency of anything. So your fungus and your candidos is a live thing, and you can get the reciprocal, and you know, you can cancel that out. And like that would be like in my Secret Sounds book when I describe Sherry Edwards' work and bioacoustics and some of the mystery school information on the voice, you can get into looking at anything you don't want within and canceling it out. I don't know. Does that answer your question?
That probably does. It's a... because I've got a big thing about that this is the candida is the route through a lot of mind control, you know, mass mind control. It keeps everybody dull and slow, and people love it. People crave it because it forms a craving being inside you. It's like the invasion of the body snatchers all over. It's just your
fungus.
Daily bread. You know, it's daily bread is what's doing it. Daily beer and daily bread, and I'm telling people, it's what keeps you stupid, okay? Jesus himself said, "Beware the leaven of the Pharisees."
Ah, yes. Yes. You know, there's an ancient method called toning. And it's based on the idea that your body needs certain frequencies generically, but also individually. So let's say you have more fungus than the next person, or they have more than you. They might need more of the frequency to kill that fungus than you would. And rather than getting into the science of things, like I do in Secret Sounds, the intuitive way would be to tone. And you just sound like a fire siren. It's pretty simple. Like, ooh. And there's a lot of technique with that. But simply by doing those glissandos, it's like offering your body a smorgasbord. And the body can hear all those different tones and pick out what it wants. I believe that's part of the reason why people are attracted to bowls, like Tibetan bowls. They have a rich, like, diet of all those little tiny frequencies that we don't hear because we only pick seven half notes in our octave or seven whole notes in our octave. And all those little tones in between. And, you know, our body needs them all for health and different things. And so it can kind of selectively pick out what it needs. I did an experiment with Sherry Edwards' NanoVoice at nanovoice.org. You can download free software to break your voice into component pitches, much as light goes through a crystal and breaks into rainbow colors. You can do that with your voice. And so I would tone and give my body an equal diet of just every little tone by doing that little siren fire engine thing. And over slowly, because sound energy always operates slow but sure, I would start to get rid of the problems in my voice. So there's a technique that requires no technology.
Absolutely. You know, I've discovered the same thing. I have a thing called a ganta, which is a Tibetan bell. It's like a school bell, but you play it with the stick. So instead of it sort of just going ping and ringing away, it goes beep, you know, and then my camera falls on my microphone. Anyway, it's interesting because if you then walk around a room, there are things that make it go as you're going around. And you just keep going through it and keep going through it, and eventually it'll keep going, it'll go back to being smooth again. Like this thing has broken up an element in the room. And I think that that's an analogy to what's been going on in when you're doing the vocal sweep, which is what I've, you know, I've done this as well. And when I hear a crackly note, I try to hold that note and try to sing that note. And I know, and then I get the emotional reaction of it. And that's where I see where the blockage is.
If you don't have that note within, you're not going to be able to voice it. If you don't have that note within, it's causing problems. You need them all. So that's very intuitive.
Yeah, well, you know, like I said, I've known Shari for a long time. And all it takes is the attitude. All it takes is the attitude that sound healing works.
Mm-hmm. Does it help?
It just
Intention
does.
Intention makes a difference.
Yeah. And then, you know, assuming that it does, and if you can assume that it does, then everything just opens up and the whole universe becomes like a kind of, almost like a soft putty, because you can see that sound will affect matter. And we saw that they did this in the building of the pyramids, and I'm not just saying in Egypt, but it's been remote viewed by the Institute, Farsight guys, and they remote viewed how they moved the stones from the pyramids, and they were levitating them with sound. Exactly as Edward Leedskalnin, the guy from the Coral Castle, did.
What was I going to say?
Matter.
There was in about the 50s, Dr. Jarl and Bruce Caffey, he wrote a book that shows how the Tibetan monks did it. This Dr. Jarl witnessed, and he's a Swedish doctor, the Tibetan monks levitating stones. And it was off these ancient ideas that we've discussed tonight. Like, for example, they had rows of monks at the bottom of a cliff, and they would be plotted out, so they're creating shapes. And it was very important the angle at which their mouth was, or their trumpet, or trumpet-like instrument was. So they were angling sound. Again, the idea that it's not just sound willy-nilly, it's like a water pistol, where you aim. And that they had these rocks to be lifted up the cliff. And one of the things in this example, there was even a video, which I did get to see. It was kind of cool. And anyway, it looked like they had dug somewhat of a hole in the ground underneath the rock that was going to be lifted like 500 feet to the cliff. And it appeared from my uncalculating eye that they were aiming their sound underneath the rock so that the sound energy would build underneath the rock and start like a water fountain to take it up the hill. Anyway, they would use a pattern of pitches, singing different types of harmonics, different types of instruments, and the position at which they sang. And they move. It wasn't really a video, it was an old-fashioned black and white film, and it showed them doing it. And Bruce Caffey, in his book, he gives away his book free. He has an illustration of where everybody stood and what the sacred geometry of the location of the musicians was in order to lift that rock. Kind of cool.
Very cool. I'm a big fan of Bruce Caffey. He's the guy, and I can't remember the exact frequency, but his stuff is all about the resonance of latitudes and longitudes.
Yes.
That UFOs can only go in along certain latitudes, and only things happen in certain places. So he says that you can't explode a nuclear weapon in any old place at any old time. You had to choose the right moment for it to happen. But that's very subtle, and you know. He was an airline.
Techniques.
Yeah, go on. Yes. Talk
ancient
about
ancient techniques. He's talking about the ley lines and subtle energy veins, rivers that are in the earth. And in ancient times, they would locate temples in which they would sing 24/7. And they would, again, like water pistols, they would project their sounds on the ley line. So if you have a heavenly harmonic sound and you go on these ley lines, it's like it gets amplified. It's like you're shooting health and joy and harmony into the veins of the earth. And ancient people, they would have their sound, their singing on these intersections of these ley lines, and they would do that to promote peace. What a beautiful idea.
Do you think walls of the pyramids were designed to absorb sound from people singing around them?
Oh gosh, I hadn't thought about that. I don't know. What do you think?
Oh no, you just said that, and I was just looking down at my little, at one of my little millions of pyramids, sitting on my desk here, and I thought, yes, triangles, because so there's the geometric forms, and it just popped up in my screen just a minute ago. Is the Genesa crystal, or the cube octahedron, or the vector equilibrium? Are you familiar with that form? Nassim Harriman talks about it all the time.
It's, to some extent, yes.
It's threes and fours. It's squares and triangles.
Okay.
But it's like a, almost like a basic platonic solid that is made of, that instead of a single triangle side or facet or square facet, it's a combination of the two. And it aptly describes a torus form as well. And what they're saying is that through the squares and out through the triangles, or in through the triangles and out through the squares. Actually, Nancy may hopefully remember thing. So I hope Nancy's listening and she might remember it. But it's something that our tame shaman was talking about. But basically, that this form draws in through the triangular form and expresses out through the square form. No, I'll get it round the other way. It draws in through the square form and expresses out. So it draws in the negative fours and expresses out the positive threes. Or
that would correlate with astrology, where they say the four shape creates dissonance and the triangle shape creates harmony.
Yes. Yes, 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 yes. And this is, it's all coming together tonight, I tell you. If anybody could listen to this program and really understand what we're talking about, they'd be like up nine levels of consciousness. But it's brilliant. Thank you, Jill, for sharing your incredible insight and, you know, diligence that has to be rewarded somehow. You know, that you've actually bothered to look at all these different types. And, okay, so first of all, I want to know, what's Lemurian music sound like? What's the kind of deal with them? Did you say that they were mostly telepathic, so it's kind of mostly like mime? You know,
right. So
the Lemurian Greatest Hits. It's actually the Lemurian Greatest Hits sounds a lot like the Wolf Spirit Radio famous Dead Air collection.
Well, I would say, not having it in my direct conscious memory, that the writings that I did see about it were that the space between the notes was very large. So they were listening to a broader band of frequencies than we can hear with our ears. In other words, they were listening clairaudiently. And it would be sounds that would connect them to greater amounts of spirit groups or energy or information. They were more like a group soul. They were wiser. They were less physical. And I would also say that the Lemurian music was very feminine, and think of water music, think of mermaids, think of dolphins, here's an example. Here's my voice with the energy of water in it. It's very compassionate and nurturing. Now my voice has got a masculine kind of sound to it. And one of the things is because I'm just kind of skirting the question, because I really have not heard of Lemurian music, but I do know some of their sound techniques. But that I've seen in one of these patterns that you often see a feminine epic or a great culture, then come followed by a masculine. And so the Atlantean would be much more masculine, mental, developing those skills. And you can see that, again, that pattern in ancient Greece. They loved beauty. They, you know, look at their statues. Oh, man, they're just gorgeous. They're gods. Their physical bodies are exquisite. And their music is flutes and harps and delicate, thin little music. And then you see, you know, the positive side of the feminine the negative side of the famine. They get all wussy and they fall. And look at the response to that is Rome, who rises up afterwards as they're falling. And Rome is very masculine, just like to me, the Lemurian and the Atlantean, where it's in the Greek you had this delicate feminine, just exquisite little music. And in the Roman music, you've got the trumpets, you've got the drums, you've got the big tubas and the bucasinos and the different instruments like those. You see the instruments in the arenas when they're used to cheer people on to see people get killed and murdered. You had the instruments playing in their victory parades, in a Roman victory parade. They would have big elephants, and they would have all the army, and they would feed people, and they would, you know, blow incense to them, and then they would have all their captives, half of which are going to be slaves and or murdered in front of them for entertainment. And then, you know, the army captains, they would have mimes to make people hateful for them, and music to get people riled up. And you know, basically you have the masculine, and then you have the distortion of the masculine. And I'm just seeing that little pattern, the beautiful feminine, the distortion of the feminine. And then you see the response to that in Rome, the beautiful masculine, and then the distortion of the masculine. And I'm, so given that kind of a pattern, I would suspect that maybe otherworldly, we couldn't even hear it. It would have to be transposed down octaves for us to hear. But very watery sounding, think of fairy music, think of, you know, listen to space sounds. Here's another idea. If you take the sound of the human voice and you raise it three octaves, it's going to sound like crickets. And in fact, you can now go on YouTube and type in something like cricket chorus, and they have videos now where they've taken cricket sounds down three octaves.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah, you can hear the human voice in it. But that's a piece of the pie. You can take the human voice up and hear birds, five octaves. Seven octaves, it goes to dolphins. Nine to whales, and 11 to stars. And you can get on NASA and listen to space sounds. So maybe there's a little fusion of space sounds in Lemurian music. I'm just playing, imagining, guessing.
Interesting. Because I've actually taken one of my bands. I've been playing in many various rock bands over the years, and there was one tune that we did written by a friend of mine, Sue Sweeney, who which was called Skin Deep. And it's one of the versions that we had sort of whaley sounds. Anyway, Sean David Morton gave me a tape of a Pleiadian beam ship that was recorded by Billy Meyer. And it was this kind of sound. And I placed it onto this track, and it sounded just exactly like it should have been there. If anybody's wishing, I will play it after this on Wolf Spirit Radio once this is done, between this track and the next. It's very interesting.
You know, Mickey Hart of the Grateful Dead,
yep,
he worked with some of the observatories and got literal space sounds and put them to music. It was really quite popular for a while.
Yeah, well, actually, here's another one. Star Trek Voyager. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
You know, there's a bit where they go through and they go through the rings of a Saturn-like planet. And you hear this kind of as it does so. That's actually a sample from when a ship did go through the rings of Saturn.
And I heard a sample of, I think it was the rings of Saturn, and they slowed it down, and it was actually a melody. Kind of cool.
Yeah, that was probably that's like when you bounce off things, but you know, you have different rock sizes pinging off your hole. Yeah. It's like, bing, bang, 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 bang. Yeah, it would you know, be the sounds of lots of pingings, I would imagine, as you hit. It's like hitting dust, you know, like. But it's just saying. Meanwhile, This is awesome. However, we're coming to the end of the program. I've really had a ball tonight. So here's the thing. Let's just bring this together, okay? So you're talking about Lemurian, feminine, Atlantean masculine, Greek feminine, Roman masculine. How do you feel about European feminine, or East feminine, and West masculine, or in terms of the current conflict in our world?
Well, I would definitely say that the East, particularly look at like India and China, they were using the older scales, which mocked the patterns in nature. And I believe that the sounds of the Hindu music makes them want to meditate and pursue spiritual practices. And so their music, I believe, is like the Pied Piper, has enabled to develop those skills. Look at the Dalai Lama and people in that area of the world. And then you look at the West. You look at us with our equal temperament scale, and it's likened to oral caffeine. It makes us industrious. We go out and work. We produce more. We can produce, if we weren't so selfish, we could make sure that no one was hungry. And because we produce a lot, and we have done a lot of blessings and good things for our people by developing the material. And so I just really slice it a little different, that the music in the different hemispheres each gave us a different skill. And at this point in time, we're blending. So since India has been listening to USA and Britain radio and, you know, the Eastern temperament scale, their economy has improved. And while we have started to have music like you were playing, infusing some of the ragas from the spiritual tradition into our music, you find that the spiritual crowd is growing in our world. And I know we're coming to an end, and you know, we forgot to tell people, I want to tell them that I have a half hour of free music on my site, because I am healing the world with my music, song by song, and it's at jillswingsoflight.com, jillswingsoflight.com, and there's a half hour of free music, and if you sign up for that, right now I'm giving away a free book, and in exchange for a review on Amazon, and also I have videos and articles and methods and training of learning how to rock your world properly and in control with sound.
Do you know you are being heard right now on revolution.rocks? No, revolutionradio.rocks. So
no,
we're rocking some rocking domain. We're rocking the domains here. it's been so. Look, just until you'll hear a guitar at the end, right? Until that time, plug the heck out of yourself, okay, my love? It's been brilliant. Thank you so much, Jill. Plug the hell. Go on.
Oh my gosh.
Knock yourself out. Blow your trumpet.
Well, I have a chakra CD in which I've combined 18 different ways in ancient mystery schools of healing the chakras. And I've made it very powerful because you don't want to heal a little bit, you want to heal a lot. And so underneath each chakra, it's a tone, it's a frequency, it's a harmony, it's a rhythm, but it's also like an organ, which you can tune. It's a crystal, which is a frequency, it's an element, which is a sound. And it's just rocked with sound, making it powerful. And that's a great way to heal at jillswingsoflight.com.
JillsWingsOfLight.com. You know where you heard it. Go and buy stuff. And go and buy stuff from me, but go and buy stuff from Jill. Thank you so much, Jill. It was brilliant. Thank you. Good night.
Okay, good night.